Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly, a historic weekend in the Premier League. Rooney's 100th goal, Friedel's 167th straight game, and Scolari's first paranoid referee rant. Football Weekly's got it all covered. There's news from abroad too. Italy, with Inter showing their rivals a clean pair of heels, and Spain, as Real tumble, will they fire burnt? Fire, burnt, get it? All that plus posts and the FA Cup with some of the biggest cup surprises since the invention of the padded bra. All in Football Weekly, the show that delivers like a goose farmer making foie gras. On board today, hello Barry Glendinning.
Hello James Richardson.
Hello Barry Glendinning. Hi Sean Ingall.
Hello James.
And greetings to you John Ashdown.
Hello James.
Sean, what are all those notes there?
Oh, it's nothing James. I was the car my wife and I were driving in were hit by a guy that ignored the giveaway sign yesterday. So I was just been scribbling various bits. But on the way back, having waited 3 hours in for the pickup truck to take our smashed up car back to London, the driver had Band-Aids, Do They Know It's Christmas Time on. And you know when you're bored and there's nothing to do? I was just working out. It probably has more errors in it than any other pop song in history.
Errors in what sense? Grammatically?
Well, generally, I mean, the first verse, it says, it's Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid. And the second verse, it says, there's a world outside your window, and it's a world of dread and fear, which just contradicts itself. They say there won't
be... Well, it's not a contradiction. He's saying there's no need for... He doesn't say nobody's afraid.
Well,
he says there's no need to be afraid.
But then he says, you know, there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas
time.
Kilimanjaro. Yeah.
There's no error about that. Oh, I see.
No rain or
at
river...
At altitude.
No rain or river flows. No, the Nile and other places, you know, and then it's really quite condescending. It's, you know, here's to you, raise a glass for everyone.
Right.
Here's to them underneath that burning sun.
Yes.
Do they know it's Christmas time at all?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just basically saying they're thick.
Get them diaries.
Yeah.
Get them diaries. That's the message there from Midge.
Didn't Midge write that song in about 3 minutes in the back of a taxi?
Well, maybe he might wanted to take a little bit more time about it, given the the proportion of our cultural baggage it's come to take up. Thanks, Sean, for that.
Sorry, it was a bad day yesterday.
In other unrelated...
You probably imagine.
Oh, and before you ask, James, Sean and his wife were both okay.
I've seen both of them this morning. So I'm clear on that score. John Ashdown, you were Ashdown, as it's more traditionally pronounced.
Yeah, generally.
You went all the way to Sunderland Bolton. Is Roy Keane now regretting the day the Black Cats crossed his path, do you think?
I don't think so. I think he's a very honest chap.
Right.
And he's a little bit too honest, I think, sometimes with the press. So when he's sort of saying, I'm considering my position, I'm always considering my position.
Right.
I think that's just a sort of a bit of his psyche sort of leaking out that most managers perhaps, you know, wouldn't say. I really don't think that he's going anytime soon.
Oh, that's interesting. We'll talk more about that game later on. Sean quite correctly insists that we start with the huge match Sunday afternoon at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea defeated 2-1 there by Arsenal. The Gunners once again responding to the tag of team in crisis with a very important victory. Last time, of course, Man United. This time, Chelsea. I've got a long list of questions. The first one is, what good is that if they then go and lose with all the others?
It's an absolutely fair point. I mean, Arsenal, there's no point losing 3-0 to City. And yet, you know, if you beat these big sides, you know, Arsenal have lost 5 times this season. They're not going to win the Premier League, even if, you know, United have had an early wobble and Chelsea are certainly wobbling now. If they can't beat, you know...
It's only 7 points, Sean.
It is, but you know with Arsenal, I mean, what surprised me yesterday, actually, Chelsea never really looked like equalising, but you still can't look at that Arsenal back four and their goalkeeper and think this is a team that's going to go away into teams in February and January and, you know, the pitches perhaps aren't as good and the weather isn't as good and grind out results.
Hmm. Scolari didn't take long to settle in. I noticed a couple of weeks ago it was whatever the referee says goes for me, and yesterday it was I demand an apology, they've come here with a plan to defraud us.
Well, I think he went back on, sort of retracted any suggestion that it might have been a conspiracy against Chelsea, but all he said was that he wanted an apology. He accepted and acknowledged that referees are going to make mistakes and that they're only human, but he said, I want the ref to look at that and admit he was wrong. I don't see the harm in that.
Oh, okay, fair enough. But in general, when he arrived, we were all falling at his feet and it was like the second coming and stuff. But now, one victory in six and they've played all the rest of the big four, they've only taken 1 point. Is this just their little blip and everything's going to be
possibly
fine?
Or? I mean, I think the problem with Chelsea at the moment is they haven't really got a plan B. At the moment, the start of the season, Mikel was given so much space. He directed things. You had both fullbacks bombing down the wings. I think teams have realised that if you do stick a man on Mikel, it can interrupt quite a lot of their play. And they certainly, if you press on the fullbacks as well, I agree with you. I mean, it worries me that they've drawn against Newcastle and Spurs as well at home. But it's early days. I remember sort of going back, you know, a decade. You know, United, when they were winning the league fairly constantly, they'd always have their blips where they'd probably lose at home to Southampton. There was a year they lost, I think, 5-0 to Newcastle as well. It's not uncommon, I think, for teams to wobble a bit at this stage of the season. And Chelsea are still top, albeit probably only for another few hours. And there's a long way to go. And with the squad they've got, you know, they're still odds-on favourites with the bookies.
Right, only a couple of hours because Monday night sees Liverpool hosting West Ham, and you're confident over Benitez's chances.
It would be a major shock, I think, if West Ham got anything from that game.
Right, OK. Arsenal, fine show character to bounce back.
Absolutely, yeah. Chelsea's defending was poor for the two goals, and both goals came as a result of Adebayor winning balls in the air and, you know, knocking them down. And so, again, like Arsenal's win over Manchester United, it wasn't particularly convincing win, and the game probably could have gone either way. Yeah, it's really strange that Arsenal are able to beat United, beat Chelsea, but can't beat Stoke, can't beat Hull.
Maybe if they'd had a Van Persie goal incorrectly ruled onside against Stoke, they would have won that game.
Well, who's to say?
Who's to say? Excellent. Well, as you know, that's fascinating, but we'll see what the future holds, because, you know, one swallow doesn't make a spring. Bolton-Sunderland. Sunderland-Bolton, John. How was your trip to the Stadium of Light?
It was fine, actually. I had Jonathan Wilson for company on the way up there, and he acted as sort of a trivia expert / tour guide on the 3.5-hour trek up to Newcastle. But it was a worthwhile journey, because it was a good game and an interesting game.
Yeah, Bolton, 4 wins in 5. Gary Megson in danger of becoming popular.
Yeah, well, they were chanting his name in the away end.
But they've been doing that for some time.
Well, it's quite an interesting turnaround. It is quite an interesting turnaround, isn't it? Yeah, they actually there's only one Gary Megson apparently now. Whereas before, I don't know if there was more or not.
Several of them, and all of them loathed.
But Bolton played pretty well. It was quite even in the first half. And they're very, very good at just compressing the space once they get into a lead. And once they went 4-1 up, the back line pushed up. Sunderland basically had to play in a 40-yard spread, but sort of 10 yards into their own half and 30 yards into the Bolton half. And they had simply no idea of how to break that system down. Keane's substitutions were rather uninspired, swapping creative midfielders for less creative midfielders.
But when you're a couple of goals down, though, it's a little bit...
It is, but he took Mel Brunk and Andy Reid both off for Tiano and Liam Miller, which isn't really sort of the thing that's going to change the game for you.
What interests me about Keane is he doesn't seem to be having... It's always him looking forlorn on the touchline. Mm. He doesn't really seem to have anyone with him that as his mouthpiece that can help him, that can take some of the slack. He looks like
a man.
I don't
think he needs a mouthpiece. That's one thing department he's not.
He does, though. He's got that increasingly ridiculous beard with a little white speck.
Why is it ridiculous, Sean? It does make him a little bit look like he's got kind of gay biker chops from a distance.
Someone wrote into us earlier today pointing out that he's increasingly turning into a ringer for Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Perhaps he could be his doppelganger or something.
Perhaps so. Perhaps
but you get the feeling like that Triggs the dog now is at home in the house watching the football results and then just picking up his lead and walking to the door to await the return of his master after each catastrophic defeat. Their defensive blunders on Saturday were just unbelievably bad.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, 6 defeats in 7 and it just seems to get worse. And from his point of view, it must be absolutely demoralising to see your players go out there after presumably hammering on all these things every week and see, I don't know, Whitehead Collins making the kind of gifts that Sunderland can ill afford.
I mean, Whitehead and Collins have... Whitehead's been playing well. He had a bad day at the office on Saturday. Collins isn't terrible, but... Keane has blamed himself, says the buck stops with him, and it's difficult to see how they're going to stay up.
Yeah. Intriguingly, on the betting for next manager to leave his club, Sean, you'll have an update on this, I'm sure, but last time I looked, the top three positions were all held by former United teammates. You've got Roy Keane, Paul Ince up there, of course, as well, and Mark Hughes for the ongoing situation at Man City and whether their view on that club's future differs. A quick mention for Paul Ince, because that's now 9 games without a win. a 3-2 defeat at Portsmouth. I forgot to text him as well, so the misery continues. But I'm going to try and get that done this week. Although there was a disallowed goal here too. I forgot to mention that Roy Keane suggesting that if Cisse's goal had gone in. Would it have been any different if Cisse's goal had been allowed? No.
It's hard to say, isn't it? Okay. But I think they were well and truly thumped and they deserve to lose.
Right, OK. Blackburn, meanwhile, they deserve to lose.
I mean, it doesn't help that, you know, Sunderland have got United next week. Yeah. Blackburn have got Liverpool. They're both struggling. But after that, though, I think it's interesting. Sunderland have got West Brom and Hull. Blackburn have got Wigan and Stoke before Christmas. And you sort of think they've really got to get things rolling before the Christmas period.
All right, I'll put that in my message then. Excellent. Hughes, Manchester Derby. It was a bit dull, actually, wasn't it?
It was. Ronaldo's sending off, I think, was the highlight. What was he thinking?
For those who missed it, Barry.
Well, it was his second yellow card. He went up for a header and palmed the ball away with both hands and then claimed he'd heard a whistle.
Yes, beep. He called it a beep, actually.
A beep. Well, someone fired off an air horn.
Right.
Just before he batted the ball away, but it could not be mistaken for a whistle. I suspect it was just a moment of total insanity.
Well, sir, Alex Ferguson was saying that he felt he was going to be hit in the face. He put his hands up to defend it, but I like Mark Hughes's response. Why didn't he just head it?
Yeah.
Although his nerve might have been unnerved by the fact that in the first half, I think one of the City ball boys threw the ball violently at Ronaldo in the face. Which he only narrowly avoided getting caught by.
Well, and so he was thinking the second half, I'm not going to let that happen again.
Curses, they're at it again.
Terrorised by a small boy.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be the only one. There's lots of people in London and the rest of the
country. Terrorised by small boys. Urchins, I tell you what. It's always been an issue, isn't it? Wayne Rooney got his 100th goal, tum-ti-tum-ti-tum, his first in nine, and ran up and down like a mad thing. Villa Fulham, big disappointment there at Villa Park. Crowd booing. Fulham, you have to say, it's remarkable the effect that Roy Hodgson's having. Nobody really wants me to talk about this, not even Fulham fans out there, so I won't. Except to say that Brad Friedel got his 167th straight game, which is remarkable. And Ashley Young looked brilliant, and that's enough, probably. Everton got.
Well, I think if Fulham had anyone who could score goals, they'd actually be doing.
Well, if Aston Villa had anyone who could score goals, because they had lots of chances. But they all just fell to the likes of Barry and Sidwell. Yeah. But, you know, hey, anyway, in a month's time, in a day's time, we'll all have forgotten about the game. So Spurs-Everton, far more interesting because Everton becoming only the second team to defeat Spurs since Harry Redknapp's arrival there. Moving up to seventh place. But poor old David Moyes, no sooner has he sorted out his team, than he goes and loses both Yakubu with his...
Achilles
tendon.
Achilles.
So he's out for the season,
yes,
is that right?
Yes, yeah.
And then they bring on Luis Saha, who was already complaining about twinges at his hamstring, and he's now out as well.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely nobody. Who have they got? Victor and Inichibi?
They're going to have to play Tim Cahill up front, it looks like, as a makeshift striker, and probably buy somebody in January.
Mm.
James Vaughan, who's one of the other strikers, he's injured as well.
Right.
But they do sort of tend to play one up front, don't they? And it might be an Ichibi with perhaps Cahill tucked in behind or something like that. But it's a huge blow. Mm. That was very high pitched.
Huge.
That was a bit like your Hughes earlier up.
Did I do one of those?
You said Hughes.
Ah, dear. Apologies, listeners. Apologies. Let's have a quick break and take stock of ourselves, and we'll be back with Sid Lowe in a second. Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Hello.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, and everybody here in the pub with me, Barry, Sean, John, producer Ben, who's standing in for producer
Pete. Could we just get on with it?
All right, then. Sid. Right. Real lost with Getafe. They're 6 points off the top. Wesley Sneijder's out injured. Is Schuster going to get a shoeing?
Well, I think he is very soon. The question mark is what happens now in the next 3 weeks. Obviously, they play Sevilla, then Barcelona, and that's the big one, and then Villarreal and Valencia. They're just awful at the moment, Real Madrid. I mean, we were talking about this, weren't we, last week, that they had 2-1-0 victories in a row, and everyone was saying, oh, well, maybe they've settled a little bit, maybe they've sorted out a little bit. But you know, one of them was against Recreativo de Huelva, the worst team in Europe at the moment, at the bottom of any of the top flight leagues, and the other was against the Batty boys from wherever they're from, and they're a terrible team as well. And this weekend, Madrid were just completely taken apart by Getafe. And it wasn't just that Madrid lost, it's that it really could have been more. I mean, Getafe had two absolutely blatant penalties turned down. And Schuster admitted after the game, quite bizarrely, I thought, he said, it was a defeat that didn't hurt. And it didn't hurt, he said, because I never at any stage thought we would win it.
No.
Which is not really what you want to hear from your coach.
Indeed so. So who've they got left up front? Then Schneider's injured, Robin's injured, Higuain's injured, Van Nistelrooy's injured.
Yeah, and this is really doing is it's starting to get a little bit of finger pointing going towards a certain Walter Di Salvo, who of course was at Manchester United with Carlos Queiroz. He's a guy that's taken over what Real Madrid like to presume is their version of the Milanello lab, that, you know, this is the thing that's going to make sure all of our players are fit, we're going to be well on top of things, we're never going to have injuries, and oh dear, it hasn't quite worked like that. Real Madrid have almost half of their squad injured at the moment. There are 14 players have been out of through one sort or another of muscular injuries this year, 18 in total. Now, obviously, the 18 in total, things like Ruud van Nistelrooy doing his knee, Ruben de la Red fainting and stuff like that, you can say, well, that's kind of a freak injury. But 14 muscular injuries mean that people are really pointing at Walter Di Salvo.
Sid, haven't they heard of DP in Spain?
I think they have, but I think that's not really the point. One of the things that's interesting is this, of course, everybody now is pointing the finger at everybody else for all sorts of different reasons. Things like nutrition, they're saying, is problematic, the kind of massage and rub-down routine that Real Madrid use, the intensity of the training. But the whole point is that Di Salvo was supposed to be putting in place a structure in which he protected all the players. Now, there are those people who think that he's to blame. There are others, of course, who blame Schuster. There are others who say it's because there's a short squad, and I'm sure it's a culmination of a whole series of things. One thing no one seems to have picked up on in Spain is that the last time Di Salvo was at Real Madrid was under Carlos Queiroz, and of course David Beckham's first season at Real Madrid, and Real Madrid absolutely collapsed in the second half of the season physically and lost their last five games, which is a club record. So you sort of think, well, it's not the first time this has happened to him. Now, that said, I think perhaps a more important factor here is to look at what happened back then and what's happening now, which is they just don't have the squad, and that's basically because of people getting it wrong at the very top, rather than people getting it wrong with their hands on people's muscles.
Mm. Excellent, Sid. Listen, you, meanwhile, were in Seville on the weekend. See, a huge result for Barcelona.
Yeah, magnificent for Barcelona. A really, really good result. And I felt that they
3-0,
really,
I'm just throwing in here. 3-0.
Yeah. 3-0 for those who don't know. A goal for Samuleto and two from Leo Messi, who was brilliant. I mean, he didn't actually play that fantastically well, but both finishes are really superb. And the first of two finishes for Messi, it goes through the middle for him, he heads it down and volleys it. Well, volleys it in. It wasn't a volley, it bounced first. But he finished in a way that just doesn't happen with Messi. We've watched Messi over the last few years, and he nearly always strokes the ball into the net. He's very calm with his finishing. He did something I haven't seen him do for a long time, which is really put his foot through the ball and finish like a proper centre forward. He was very, very good in both finishes. The other thing that I think was very significant is Barcelona made it very clear that they're proper candidates for the league, I think, in a couple of ways. The first one was that they didn't play brilliantly in the first half, but they got the rub of the green, and they were devastatingly effective in their finishing. Samuleto scored a brilliant goal. And then the second half, when Sevilla came at them, I thought Guardiola handled it brilliantly. Barcelona just kept the ball. Sevilla made three changes going for Barcelona, and Guardiola just let them make them. Just let it happen. Yeah, we'll deal with it. And then when the changes were made, it was as if he turned around to Manolo Jimenez and said, oh, have you finished? Right, now it's my turn. Put on Kleb, and Kleb created one of the last two goals. And Barca just looked very, very impressive indeed. Manolo Jimenez said after the game that the bottom line is people are saying we didn't play well. We couldn't play well. We had too good a team against us.
Sid, I noticed now Barcelona are 4 points clear of Villarreal and further ahead of the rest. Can you see anyone catching them? I mean, they've scored 40 goals now in 13 games. They just seem to be crushing everyone.
Yeah, they are absolutely hammering just about everybody, and they're playing very, very well indeed. And right now, the truth is, I can't see anyone catching them.
I bet they lose to Real Madrid.
But that's the thing. I have a sneaking suspicion that they'll lose to Real Madrid, because Real Madrid will go there and play on the break, and they'll be very up for it, and they've got one or two good players. Except I look at the Madrid squad now, given the injuries,
yeah.
And I think I don't see the players that can play on the break for them. I don't see the pace up front. I mean, Raul is unbelievably slow. Javier Saviola is not particularly quick. Higuain, we're not sure if he's even going to be fit. Wesley Schneider's almost certainly out. So you think, well, the pace would only really come from Royce and Drenthe. And the thing about Drenthe is, while he's very quick and a very willing runner and goes at people, his final pass doesn't tend to be great, although at the weekend he provided one on the plate for Raul, which he missed miserably. I think the one other word of caution that I'd found here is that Barcelona are going for a goals record set by the team from 1996-97 when they had Ronaldo, who of course at the time was the best player in the world, but not just the best player in the world, he was just taking the mickey out of the league. He was too good for everybody. And they had the best goals record in the league that year, and they lost the league to Fabio Capello's Real Madrid. And at this stage of the season, they looked utterly peerless as well. So, I mean, it's probably a little bit too early, but the truth is that they do look phenomenally good, Barcelona.
I'll tell you what, Sid, interesting, I was reading the last couple of days about a very exciting centre-forward in the Madrid area. I don't know if this would be any use to them. This from London's Pride. He says, I was on the telephone to my brother in Madrid the other day talking about Football Weekly podcast and Sid Lowe, and Mark, his brother, replies, that's interesting, I play in a Madrid seven-a-side league with a centre-forward called Sid Lowe. And apparently you have a deft touch on the pitch. Is that you, Sid Lowe?
Was that deft or deft?
Is that you, Sid?
I'm not playing at centre forward anymore. I've retreated to a far, far deeper position now. I'm not quick enough anymore.
Oh, there you go. Is it also true that the Carriages, is that your team, the Carriages?
Well, that's what it's that's what it's called if you translate the name. Yeah.
What's it called in Spanish?
La carreta, the okay, carriage cool. Or the cart.
Right. Okay. The
cart is probably more appropriate. Right. To be okay. Honest with you.
The fleet-footed centre-forward last season slid in late into the opposition's goalkeeper, very much frowned on in Spain, and had to then face a brutal attack from his mother, who marched onto the pitch and hit him with her handbag. Sid, did that happen?
Sort of. Yes. It was. I think. You know what? I think it might not have been last season. I think it might even be the season before. There's an ever so slightly wrong telling of the story, but it's very close. Basically, there was a bit of a set to, and the goalkeeper raced 40 yards to punch me in the back of the head. I didn't see it coming, obviously, because it was the back of my head. And his mum ran on the pitch shouting at one of our players to return back to his own country, Romania, to which he turned around and said, I'm Uruguayan.
But the principle is the same. So there was no handbag in your face?
There was no handbag in my face. I think it was just the turf. It's not turf, the AstroTurf in my face, yeah. After I've been hit on the back of the head.
Did you press any charges, Sid?
No, I didn't press any charges, no.
Sid, well, that's a remarkable story. And what a small world. Nice one, Dr. Sid. We'll speak to you soon.
Football Weekly with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
Ahoy, Paolo Bandini.
Ahoy.
Ahoy, Paolo. Thanks for joining us. What's fresh in the world of Serie A?
Big story this weekend was Milan losing at Palermo. Got absolutely hammered. 3-1 full-time. It could have been a lot more. To be fair, Ronaldinho did have a penalty, which was saved by Emilia early on. But you look like you're ready to interject James. So,
by Jumbo standards, that's quick.
That's enough from you. Did you see Emilia's quote where he says that...
Yeah, he knew where Ronaldinho was going to put it because he'd been playing on his PlayStation. And
He takes penalties exactly the same way.
Exactly the same way, which is, I guess, a credit to the people at EA Sports or whichever other company's video games he's playing.
Well, there you go. So Emilia saving Ronaldinho's penalty. The buck stops quite literally.
Yeah, I mean, Milan, basically, without Kaká, and as soon as Kaká comes out of that team... there's a massive drop-off, and this was supposed to be the day when Ronaldinho stepped up and carried the team, and actually Ronaldinho did have all their good chances, but they were all from set pieces, which is where a lot of what he's done, a lot of his goals have come from this season. He had one free kick that I think hit the crossbar, and Emilia saved his first penalty. He ended up scoring the only goal for Milan, again, from the penalty spot. Once again, Emilia got his hand to it. But yeah, I mean, really, he basically was sort of anonymous other than these set-piece situations.
But credit to Palermo, who were all over them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Davide Ballardini has done a really good job since coming in there. He's basically sort of gone along with what Zamparini wanted in the first place, which is a manager who'd agreed to play 4-3-1-2 because Zamparini knows best, and this was the formation that his team needed. And it's gone pretty well. I mean, I think... In some ways, this result could have been seen coming, because Palermo have always been good at home. I mean, this season, they've only lost twice at home, once which was to Inter a couple of weeks ago. And I think, actually it shows how good, that result was for Inter now when you look at it. But Milan have only picked up 9 points in 7 away games so far this season. So, they're travelling horribly, and Palermo are a good team at home, and, they're playing pretty well at the moment.
Mm. Should mention, actually, who was it posting in saying, I know a lot of water under the bridge will have flowed since Pompey's 2-2 draw with Milan game, but I hope this pod, this is Here We Go, can spare a few moments to mention a momentous game. He mentions the Gazetta's report talking about Pippo Inzaghi, saying Portsmouth tried to build a wall, but with Inzaghi, even bricks
are useless. The legend continues.
Well, I think I made the point on one of my blog forays the previous week that Inzaghi was the worst footballer I've ever seen.
No,
so
Barry.
He really threw that back in my face.
He did, yes.
Quite a brilliant piece of skill.
If that was Portsmouth's wall, then it had a flipping, gaping big hole in the middle of it.
Yes.
But it was a lovely piece of control by Inzaghi for the goal. But it was still, nevertheless, he was sort of in the middle of the box and there were three defenders all standing a good 7 yards off him. So...
It was a fantastic game, anyway. We all enjoyed that.
If even Bricks can't stop him, is he therefore one step up from the wolf in The Three Little Pigs?
That's interesting. It's your point, John. Which, sadly, we don't have much time to do.
That's probably for the best.
Meanwhile, so Milan had dropped to 6 points off the top.
Yeah, Inter have a six-point gap because
they beat Napoli.
Everyone else was already that far off. And yeah, Inter beat Napoli, or another of the teams supposed to be chasing them. I mean, I think the interesting game between Napoli and Inter will come in Naples, because I think you always would have expected Inter to win at home against them. Napoli traditionally don't travel that well. They've done a bit better in that this season than last, but they're still not, haven't got a great away record by any stretch. And the real issue will be whether Inter can win at the San Paolo. But really what this is for Inter is exactly what Jose Mourinho wanted, which is build a lead in the league where you can feel comfortable and then you can concentrate on the Champions League, which is why he's there.
What was unexpected in that match was the superb backheel flick for the goal by Sirleigh Alimuntari, of all people.
Absolutely fantastic goal, it really was. Also, last week he scored that goal that he didn't really know that much. Well, he didn't sort of hit it very well at all, whereas this week it was just a wonderful goal. You had Cruz with the back at the beginning to Maicon, who sort of slid it first touch into the box, and Muntari sort of flicked it in with his back heel. I mean, if it had been another player, like if it had been Del Piero, who we'll say something about in a second, it would have been all over the front pages as the best goal ever, and it's still getting a fair bit of play. And it was a really, really great goal, and I would advise anyone who has a YouTube available to have a look.
Say something about Del Piero then.
Del Piero scored his 250th goal in a Juventus shirt against Regina on Saturday. They won 4-0. It was a penalty, so not one of his most classic, but it was a well-struck penalty. And, well done to him and all that.
It was snowing violently there at the foot of the Alps at the Stadio Olimpico in Turin. And we could make all sorts of snow drift kind of things, but we're not going to. A 4-0 win for Juve, big win for them. Camoranesi, very impressed with him, played 45 minutes with a dislocated shoulder, set up one goal
and scored
the other, and then had to run away because his teammates wanted to come and celebrate with him. And he said, get away! But he's now out.
He played with a dislocated shoulder.
Couldn't move his arm. I think he was strapped up. Wasn't
So that's like Pele in Escape to Victory.
Very, very much,
much
so.
The same.
Yeah. That, I am told, is enough Italian football. So, Cristiano Ronaldo, we said that we would talk about him winning the Ballon d'Or.
If he, when he's presented with it, he'll probably swat it away. And
very topical.
They'll have to give it to someone else.
This is all about the 40-odd goals that he got last year, yeah?
Yeah.
Won the Champions League final with, because he's rubbish for Portugal, but whatever.
Well, he was rubbish for Portugal, and he sort of didn't have a great second half of the season, did he, last year?
Well, I mean, I still think, if you look at it, I think he scored 42 goals last season. He hasn't had a great start to this season, but he still scored 9 goals in 17 games, 8 in the Premier League, which makes him the Premier League's second top scorer.
Wow.
I mean, people have been raving about Rooney. I think Rooney has had a good start to the season, but he scored 11 in 24. Now, obviously, goals aren't be all and end all. But I think, you have to ask, who else is there this season? Messi has been injured for large parts, albeit when he's played, he's been brilliant. Players like Iniesta and Xavi have been superb for Spain, but, Barcelona, until this very late run, this season, were poor last season. So I think he is the worthy winner.
There have been worse decisions in the past.
Well, of course, I'm off the top of my head, Michael Owen in 2001 was Ballon d'Or. I think the same year, Beckham was second behind Figo in the FIFA World Player of the Year. 86, for example. I think Belenov was Ballon d'Or winner, because back then it was only for European players. Certainly would have been perhaps stronger European candidates, and Platini had a very good season that year. So I think there have certainly been worse decisions.
Yeah, good luck to him. He works hard for it. He does. Now, posts. Frostback says, oh, for goodness sake, anorthosis means an either inability to urinate or erectile dysfunction, but instead means resurrected. Thosis means to stand in Greek, while anor means again. So I can see how that confusion would come about. You guys are funny, but for crying out loud, there are Greeks all over the bloody world. You think you could find one or two there to help you with your etymology. It's etymology, as another poster pointed out, but I take your point. Anyway, Templeton the Rat, AC Jimbo, nice comments, blah, 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 blah. But putting down the FA Cup and the discussion of it was annoying. That kind of football snobbery is really grating. And you're right, Templeton the Rat. You're absolutely spot on. So special treat for you and other FA Cup lovers. We've got John Ash down here, and Barry, and Sean, and Paolo. Let's have a big FA Cup finale, because it was the second round this weekend. We just had the draw for the third round. John! shall I help you?
No, this, no,
I've got lots
fine.
Of notes here.
No, I've got stars. I've All got right. stars, many stars. Well, on Saturday, the Badgers, as we mentioned on Thursday, Eastwood Town beat Wickham in one of the big shocks of the day.
That's the first time Wickham have lost in any competition at all this season. They were the only unbeaten team in British League
football. That's right, yeah. That's right. Barrow beat Brentford on Friday night. And it was
Can I just interrupt you there? Jimbo is giving himself a little congratulatory fist pump because he managed to, for the first time ever, getting an interesting fact about a team from outside the Premiership that isn't Italian.
Right, there's more. Go on, John.
Well, I'm just waiting for the next zinger to come along now, James. Well, it was as we point out in the paper today, it was a red letter day for Histon, who beat Leeds thanks to a goal from postman Richard Langston.
You could say his goal went in off the posty.
Well, I wrote down a few other ones here, Barry, that we could. He's a box-to-box player.
He always delivers.
Always delivers.
The manager
stamps his authority on the game, that sort of thing. But I wasn't going to go there. But,
Why not? Why on earth not?
You've let yourself down.
All this comedy gold, can't let it go to waste.
So those are the big matches on over the weekend, and of course yesterday was the third round draw when the big boys bowl into town.
This is when the Premier League teams enter the FA Cup. Poor old Histon, then they beat Leeds and they get Swansea. You'd think they want something a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, the cameras, the sort of Sky cameras were there in the Histon, you know, social club or whatever for the draw, and they cut to them and they just looked miserable.
But we've talked about TV cameras. The ITV cameras picked up a rather rude swear word very loudly, effing S, which I had to then turn down, which everyone eating their Sunday lunch would have heard yesterday. And then apparently there were also more complaints because they had pictures in the Histon changing rooms afterwards of naked, completely naked players walking about, which I think... You know,
but ICV seemed to be quite surprised that there might have been naked men walking around a football dressing room. I'm not sure why.
Access all areas, as it were.
Right, okay, now Barrow beat Brentford. That was a big shot, wasn't it? Blue Square Premier side will now be taking on a Premier League
side. Yeah, that's probably the draw of the round, really. I think it's a local northeast affair. I hope that's right. Please don't shout at me if that's completely
wrong.
That's
the first time Barrow have reached the third round in 54 years.
54 years, wow. Yeah.
It's the Blythe Spartans who are up in the northeast.
Blythe, yeah, they're up in the northeast.
They're in Northumberland. They had to do, you know, they played Bournemouth on Saturday. That was a 722-mile round trip. No word of a lie. Straight fact. And if they can get, because it finished 0-0 against Darren Anderton's Bournemouth, if they can get past in the replay, we're not sure when that is, because can't know everything, guys, they will be facing Blackburn, which is a considerably shorter distance for them to travel.
That's a decent reward as well, as a Premier League team, if they can beat Bournemouth. The big four, Liverpool have to travel to Preston, which is a sort of Lancashire derby, which could be quite interesting. Chelsea host Southend, who will travel in from Essex. Who else is there? Man United have to travel down to Southampton, scene of a couple of nightmares in the past. And I failed to put a star next to Arsenal. Oh, they take on Plymouth Argyle at the Emirates. Yeah,
Hull are hosting Newcastle, who they've already beaten away. And Sunderland will be repeating that experience of this weekend when they host Bolton. Are these games coming up in January, first weekend in January?
January 3rd and 4th.
Okay, and actually next week, Guardian's moving offices as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to our swanky new well-appointed offices in King's Place. But we'll still have to trek down here, I think, to record podcasts.
Up here to be near
up here.
Yeah. All right.
For a moment, I almost let the cat out of the bag, not actually floating in orbit in a tin can in a most peculiar way.
We will have a new swanky tin can eventually.
I've seen it. It's very, very
It's huge. It can take 24 people, I think.
Yes.
There's also a green room.
So we can get all our listeners in.
Yeah, twice.
There's a green room.
There is.
That's for hospitality, isn't it? Lovely. I tell you what, we've abused our listeners' hospitality because they've been putting up with us all this time. I say we'll draw a curtain down on this. Only about another 30 seconds of goodbye to go. Right. And say thank you very much. If you want to post in, just go to the guardian.co.uk website, football, and then follow the links there. Many thanks, Barry, for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
Thanks, producer Ben, for standing in for producer Pete. And you, Sean Ingle.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Paolo Bandini.
Cheers.
Thanks, John Ashdown.
Top.
And we'll be speaking to you again soon. Bye-bye.